Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller. In our continuing series on the status of native land in Alaska, we bring you some thoughts on the recent D2 legislation recorded during a panel discussion at the AFN convention in October. That was after the Senate passed its bill. The same bill was passed by the House after the November 4th election. So references in this program to the Senate bill now mean the bill. John Shively, Vice President for Operations of the Nana Development Corporation, was the panel moderator. He'll talk about the so-called Native Amendments. First, though, we'll hear from Special Assistant to the Secretary of the Interior, Jerry Gilliland, who prefaced his remarks by holding up a very thick paper-bound book.
This is the Senate version of the D2 bill, and as such, it's quite a bit longer than Gone with the Wind or most current novels. It's a very complicated act. In fact, it may well be one of the most complicated acts that has ever passed Congress. It does a lot of things. You are very concerned with the Native Amendments in it. They are a part of it. There are many other things. The major thrust of the D2 bill is the creation of new parks, park preserves, of wildlife refuges, of wild and scenic rivers in Alaska. That's what the bill really is all about, although there are other portions, as I mentioned. What does this mean to you? Most of you, all of you really, live within or near or are affected by these new land designations. They may change your lives. They may not. To some extent, you will be able to do on these new parks, these new refuges, etc., you'll be able to do, to some extent, what you've been able to do in the past. Subsistence hunting, fishing, trapping, use your boats, your snow machines, land your airplanes, pick berries, gather firewood, the traditional activities that have taken place in the past. This has been a tremendous battle to make sure that these rights were preserved. And there is agreement on all sides that that had to be an integral part of the creation of these new units. So that's happened. We are just really beginning the Alaska lands issue. These areas will be created, then we begin to administer them. There will be general plans, comprehensive plans done for each of these new areas. There will be a whole passel of regulations written as to how these areas will be administered, as to how the subsistence rights will be enforced, for instance, what will happen to existing cabins. There's a whole long list of these regulations that are going to be put together. And as I said, these comprehensive plans. Your part in this, and you mustn't fail to do it, is to have your say in these new plans and these regulations. We are going to do our darndest to make sure that you have the opportunity to have your say. We have a lot of ideas that we're working on. For instance, one of the things that angers Alaskans the most are these very short comment periods when a chunk of paper this big comes out and you're given 30 days to comment in. We hope to make it a policy to set a 90-day comment period, or even longer in some cases, so that these papers can filter out to the villages so that you can make your intelligent input, and I hate to use that word, but input into these plans, into these regulations. They'll be as good as you and the state and the feds and everybody working together can make them. There will be a lot of new people hired to administer these new areas. It'll be nothing like Yellowstone Park or Yosemite or some of these highly developed areas in the lower 48. But there will be a number of new people hired. The bill has a provision in it which allows the waiver of some civil service rules, which would allow the land manager to hire people based on their special experience, their special knowledge from living in or near these areas. This was purposely written so that we can get around some of these educational requirements and hire Alaskans, people who can provide, let's say, the visitor service, the information, the biological research that we're really going to need to do. And this is an area that we're all going to work on. There'll be some resistance, I'm sure, within some portions of the federal establishment to doing this. And this is another area where you all can help us and you all can push us to make sure it gets done. There's no question there's going to be an increase in tourism in Alaska. Some of your villages may want to participate in this process. You may want to bring tourists in. Some of you may not. But this is an opportunity that you will have, and this will be part of the implementation process. Again, you need to be involved in it. There will be headquarters, management facilities built for these new units. The bill again provides that some of these facilities can be located on native lands within or within the vicinity of these new units, the new parks and refuges. This is an option that you may want to consider. You could become the landlord for the federal agency that's administering the area. In these new parks and refuges, there will be certain activities take place which will be of a money-making nature, for instance, providing of food, of accommodations, transportation, tours, etc. The bill provides that native corporations will be given the first preference in providing these services. Again, this is another area that you could become involved in. But the major thing I wanted to stress was that there's going to be a lot of planning, a lot of regulation writing, a lot of things that will be happening within the next year or so. This is the fulfillment of the D2 bill, and this is where it determines whether the bill is successful from your viewpoint or whether it's a failure. And I urge you to stay involved, become involved, help us with this process. Thank you.
That was Jerry Gilliland, Special Assistant to the Secretary of the Interior. Next, John Shively of the Nana Development Corporation underscores the need for Native participation in the implementation process.
I think clearly the most critical issue is subsistence. If we get a piece of D2 legislation, there's going to be a whole new structure of regional boards, regional councils in rural Alaska, and local advisory boards that are going to be absolutely essential to the development of a strong subsistence program. People living in the rural areas are going to have to participate in those boards. They're going to have to run for the boards when they're elected, and people are going to have to show up for hearings. Those boards will only work if people out in the rural areas participate in it. It's absolutely critical. There's another aspect of the D2 bill that is going to take some work, and that's what's known as the Alaska Land Bank. Many of you, or many of us that worked on the Claims Act, are concerned about what's going to happen to the land when it can become taxable in 1992. There are several amendments that relate to that in the D2 bill, but the most crucial one, I think, is the land bank. And the land bank will allow Native corporations and other individuals, too, to put land that they don't want to develop away in a bank. Initially, they put it in for a period of 10 years, and thereafter they renew for periods of 5 years. Once the land is put in that bank, it cannot be taxed as long as it's not developed, and it cannot be lost through bankruptcy or other government actions. It gives a real protection for many of those, particularly village corporations, who are going to have an awful lot of land in rural areas and won't be able to do anything with it and won't have the financial resources to pay taxes should taxes be invoked. Something else that's going to take a good deal of work for those of you who are interested in the situation, and I think many people are, is dealing with the problem of stock alienation. I know many people are already planning on how to take over native corporations when that stock becomes available in 1992. There is an amendment in the D2 bill that allow us to amend our articles of incorporation of our corporations to provide that the right of first refusal for sale of that stock goes to the corporation or perhaps to the individual's family. In addition, there's a provision that will allow us to amend the articles of incorporation so that only natives or their direct descendants could vote. In other words, if Exxon wanted to come in and try to buy up the stock in Arctic Slope, because Arctic Slope has a lot of oil, they could buy the stock, but they couldn't vote it, and that would help keep them from controlling that corporation. Now, these amendments are not automatic. They're up to the choice of each village and regional corporation. So anybody that's interested in this particular problem is going to have to go out and get the support of over 50% of each of your shareholders in order to amend your articles. We'll have hopefully 10, 11 years to do that, but I think it's critical for those of you who are concerned about the protection from outside takeover. There's also an amendment relating to allotments, which will make the deeding of allotments a good deal simpler. Essentially, most allotments will just be deeded directly to those people that applied for land allotments. Now, one of the concerns is that early on, late in the 1960s, and early in the 1970s, when people were filing for land allotments, there wasn't a lot of sophistication about the use of maps. So in many cases, people put down on the map where they thought their land was, but that's not exactly where it is. And I think there should be some concern by the corporations to go out and help people and make sure that the description that's on the map is what's on the ground, because for the government's purposes, it's the map that's most important. There will be some ability to make changes in where you've mapped your allotment, but it won't be for a very long time. One other issue that I think will take, or one other amendment that may take some work, right now the Claims Act says that every village corporation has to deed at least 1,280 acres to municipal corporations. We have an amendment that provides that the village corporation and the municipal corporation can negotiate for less than that. So there are many of us that think that 1,280 acres is a little large. Because of some constitutional problems, there was no way to just automatically cut that amount of land down. But we did get an amendment that allows the city and the village corporation to negotiate, and I think that's something that a lot of corporations should take advantage of. As many people have said today, there's an awful lot in the D2 bill for Alaska Natives. We've in many ways rewritten the Claims Act. The original Claims Act was 32 pages long. As I said earlier, we have over 250 pages of Native amendments in the D2 bill. Hopefully, most of those amendments are opportunities. One, those of us that are pessimists might say, well, if you start out with 32 pages and look at all the problems we got out of that, how many more problems are we going to have out of 250 pages? Well, maybe a lot, but I really think we've made some vast improvements, and I think if people are willing to work on the opportunities that are in that bill, we'll substantially improve the lifestyle in rural Alaska.
John Shively of the Nana Development Corporation speaking at the 1980 AFN convention. For Chinook Patterns, I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
This is Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller. President Carter has signed the Alaska Lands Act, that's the D2 bill to you and me, and included in it are more than 250 pages of amendments to the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. ANCSA itself amounted to about 32 pages. John Shively of the Nana Development Corporation worked for several years to get the amendments in the bill. Now he's having to spend a lot of time explaining them. The most crucial are what he calls the 1992 amendments. The first of these involves protection from stock alienation and outside takeover of Native corporations.
The Stock Alienation Amendment provides that a Native corporation, a village or regional corporation, can amend its articles of incorporation to provide for a right of first refusal of buying the stock if one of their shareholders wants to sell, or provide that in the case of stock being sold to anyone other than a Native, that the stock cannot be voted. The right of first refusal is really as much a protection for the shareholder as it is for the corporation. Gives a shareholder some time to think about his sale and maybe get some better information on how much his stock is really worth.
How would that work? A shareholder would want to sell some stock, they'd have to go to the corporation first?
Yeah, what would happen is, let's say an individual decided he wanted to sell, he had a buyer, he'd come in and say, I have this buyer, they want to buy 50 of my 100 shares, they want to pay $100 a share, and the corporation obviously will have to have some kind of time frame within which to respond. They could say, fine, go ahead and sell it. They could say, well, we think that's a bad deal for you to sell it to somebody else, we'll buy it. Or they could tell them, look, that price that you got offered, $100 a share, is low. The last guy that sold any stock got $1,000 a share. I mean, that's one of the problems is very few people are really going to know the value of the stock. It does offer the corporation a little bit of protection because of the fact that they can stop certain sales. But if a company like Exxon wants to come in and start buying up Native corporation stock, obviously the corporation isn't going to bid against it. That's really where the second provision comes in. So if Exxon decided they wanted to buy control of a corporation like Doyon or Nana or Arctic Slope, they could come in and start buying, but all they would get is economic rights, no voting rights, so they couldn't control the board of directors, or at least it would be harder for them to control the board of directors. There's no absolute protection in something like this unless you just don't let people alienate their stock. And since the stock has an economic value to people, we thought there should be some provision that they could. At the same time, recognizing that there was a need to protect ownership of Native corporations in Native hands for generations in the future.
You had said that the protection isn't automatic, that the articles of incorporation for the corporations will have to be changed to allow the protection of these amendments.
That's correct. There's at least one regional corporation and perhaps some other corporations that felt that we should not make this automatic, that perhaps the shareholders wouldn't want it. I think that was a legitimate concern. I mean, I have some strong personal feelings on the subject, and our shareholders and NANA asked that we do something to protect our corporation from being taken over after 1992, but other corporations might feel differently. So what is going to have to happen is each Native corporation is going to have to go out, draw up an amendment and present it to their shareholders, and they're going to have to get over 50% of their total shareholders voting yes, which is going to take some work.
The question remains on who is going to do the work, and that depends somewhat on how much Native leaders and shareholders fear the consequences of stock alienation and takeover.
Well, I've always considered it a real danger. I mean, for those corporations that are successful, people are going to want to own them. That stock can be very, very valuable, and you know, with good management and with future development of natural resources, it can only become more valuable. Some people may just want to own a few hundred shares because it's a good investment, just like people own a few hundred shares of General Motors. Other people are going to want to look at controlling the corporation. So I consider it a real threat, and I think there are a number of people in Native leadership that agree with me. I mean, if there wasn't, we wouldn't be looking at these amendments.
Okay. Are you looking at anything else besides amendments to protect yourselves?
Well, my feeling is that many of the corporations will try to do a fairly extensive stockholder education program around 1991-92 to say, look, this is what we think the stock is worth, this is what you have to go through in order to sell it, This is what happens if outsiders take over control of our corporation. To a certain extent, this is a pretty controversial statement, but though that stock really is sort of like being native. I mean, that's what being native is about in this state. That's what the settlement is. That's what the land is. And that's what the people have after, you know, literally thousands of years of living on this land. And to sell it is essentially, in my mind, and I think some other people, really selling your birthright. Now, that has to be countered with the fact that many of the people that own this stock are very poor people and that they need some economic support. Now, whether or not we can provide a mix there, I don't know. But there's going to be a lot of pressure. And people are going to have to make some very difficult individual decisions. And if they look only at themselves, what's best for themselves, then they'll sell. If they look at what's best for natives as a whole, I think by and large they'll try to hold on to their stock.
Equal to the problem of holding on to the stock is holding on to the land, especially undeveloped land that could become taxable in 1992. So there is an amendment that allows the creation of a land bank.
What the land bank is a way to protect land that native corporations do not want to develop. One of the weaknesses of the Settlement Act is that there's a great deal of land conveyed to native corporations, and a lot of that land is basically subsistence land. It's not going to be developed for anything. But it could be taxed in the future, and if it starts being taxed, it could be lost, either because people have to sell land in order to pay the taxes or because they don't pay the taxes and the government takes it. The land bank provides that a native corporation can come to an agreement on how their lands, either all or part of their lands, should be managed. This agreement is to be made with either the state or the federal government. And actually, there aren't very many tough requirements. Pretty much, if the native corporation wants to do it, they're probably going to be able to do it. Once an agreement is reached, the land goes into the land bank for 10 years. When it's in the land bank, it cannot be taxed and it cannot be taken if the corporation goes bankrupt. On the other hand, it basically cannot be developed. If a corporation would want to develop it, they could take it out of the land bank, but they would have to pay any taxes that would have been due during that period. After the first 5-year period, you can renew after the first 10-year period, the initial period, you can renew for periods of 5 years, and you can renew forever, and there are basically no new requirements. So land could just stay in the land bank as long as people wanted it to. It's in some ways a form of trust land. It certainly offers a great protection for those native corporations who do not want to or cannot develop land.
I'm not sure exactly what you meant when you said that you have to come to an agreement with the state or federal government about how the land would be managed. If it's not developed and it's just sitting there, does that constitute management?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, I think what you'll come to agreement on is things like fish and wildlife access. That's one of the things the government can ask for, is assure themselves that they can get on there to count caribou or rabbits or whatever they want to fish. You might come to some agreement on transportation and access, although the government cannot force you to open up your lands to public access. They also cannot force you to do anything that's detrimental to subsistence. It would probably discuss primarily how the native corporation lands relates to the state or federal lands that are next to it, and would try to get some kind of management philosophy that was comparable on both the native lands and the government lands. That's the main purpose of it.
Again, that's an amendment that will require some work and negotiation by native corporations who want to take advantage of the protection, which incidentally includes immunity from claims of squatters' rights. The D2 bill also contains a title dealing with subsistence. It's complicated and comes as a result of hard lobbying in Washington.
The key thing for the Alaska Federation of Natives and the Native community in looking at the Alaska Lands Bill was to assure that there was some protection of subsistence. And I think, for the most part, we took the position that in many cases we didn't care what the federal or state government called the land as long as our people could continue to subsistence hunt and fish off of it. There was some pretty active opposition to this. Many people in the State Department of Fish and Game objected to the subsistence title. The sportsmen's groups objected violently. So the subsistence title we have is a compromise which is designed to take into account some of the concerns raised by the state and by the sportsman's group. Number one, it is not racially defined. It's really defined by residents. And the idea is that subsistence is protected on federal lands for local residents. So it, in a sense, is a provision that leans towards people living in rural areas and against people living in urban areas, although we all recognize that there are people in urban areas that do get some of their food by subsistence hunting and fishing. I think the issue here is that we have a declining resource. And if you have to make difficult decisions on how much there is, then the first priority should go to the people that live in rural areas. In addition, there's a provision that there are going to be some regional boards that have a little more clout than the advisory boards that Fish and Game has traditionally had. Now, these boards can either be run by the state if the state wants to pass legislation setting them up, or if not, they'll be run by the Secretary of Interior.
What about subsistence on state lands?
Well, subsistence on state lands is covered under the state subsistence law. The federal government could not mandate how the state could manage their land for fish and game management. We feel that most of our villages are surrounded by federal land, so it won't be a real big problem. Also, if the state starts managing with subsistence as a number one priority, which they're going to have to do if they're going to want to have any real say on the management of fish and game on federal lands, then it's going to be hard for them to cut out state lands and just say we're going to treat them differently.
Do you expect cooperation from the state in this, that they will get a plan and a program going, since they have been hostile in the past and legislature could change, and actually it has changed. There's at least one member from Fairbanks that has said that the Native amendments are a sellout and that the D2 bill is only benefits Native leadership. Do you expect any backlash?
Well, I assume that Mr. Fanning, who you're talking about, will make a real effort to try to do us in. We have other people down there that have continually, I think, voted against Native interests. I think there'll be some trouble. The State Department of Fish and Game is really much better than it has been in the past. The legislature passed a subsistence law 2 years ago, and I think the state has, in many cases, tried to adhere to it. As a result of that, sportsmen's groups are talking about getting a repeal of the subsistence law, which they may do. But if that happens, then the federal government's going to run subsistence on federal lands, and basically the state will be giving up fish and game management on federal lands, which are still well over half the state.
So the rural residents will try to work with the state, and if the state can't cooperate, then it goes to the federal?
That's the way it goes.
John Shively, Vice President of Operations for the Nana Development Corporation, talked about the Native amendments in the D2 bill signed into law on December 2nd. I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.